stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome to Administrative Static. This is John Vecchione, and I'm joined by Mark Chenoweth and Janine Yunus. And this morning, we also have our colleague, Peggy Little, with us to discuss oral argument en banc before the Fifth Circuit in NCPPR versus SEC.
This is getting to be a habit, Peggy.
I really love en banc argument. It's just lively. You get so many different perspectives and questions, and it is the preferred way I like to go into court.
So en banc means it's the entire panel of the Fifth Circuit?
Correct. They have 17 judges. One was recused, Judge Ho. So it was 16 judges.
Gee, I wonder why. So, someone hired Allison Ho, I take it. So I was not able to listen to the whole thing. I only heard part, but there were a lot of people arguing.
There were. We opened with, Alliance for Fair Board Representation opened for the petitioners, and they are concentrating on the equal protection aspect of the rules. Should I?
Yeah, why don't we just do a very quick thumbnail? I think people know what this is about, but let's do a quick thumbnail of exactly what it was that we're contesting.
Sure. In 2021, the SEC approved, as it must, NASDAQ's board diversity rules, which set aside as companies that are listed on NASDAQ to set aside one board seat for someone who is either a woman or identifies as a woman. Then a second board seat is supposed to be set aside for someone who is a racial minority and or LGBTQ+ or identifies as such. And AFBR, which is the same group that had challenged similar issues with college admission, had challenged the equal protection part of that. We came in on an administrative power argument that the SEC lacks any authority whatsoever to regulate in that sphere. And also, if you're a NASDAQ company and you don't fill those two seats, you are forced to explain why. Or as I like to put it in our first brief, you have some splaining to do. And so our objection to that is government-compelled speech in violation of the First Amendment.
Got it. So who had won below or by the panel? Who won the panel decision?
The SEC and NASDAQ, who is in the case as an intervener. And we drew a panel that we knew would be favorably disposed to that kind of regulation. And they took 22 months to issue that decision. And I think at least two things I think bore upon that. One, it's a hard decision to write, given the controlling law. And two, I think they were hoping that the composition of the court might change in that period of time so that they could avoid an en banc, which I'm sure the judges writing that decision knew was going to be coming.
All right. So tell us what happened. So who argued what when?
Well, the AFBR folks opened on the equal protection issues, and then we followed, making our administrative power arguments, and then
which are
that Congress never empowered the SEC to regulate in this sphere, and you can come at that question in two ways. The most powerful is a specific provision of the statute that says that the SEC may not approve any rule that is not designed to further the purposes of the 1934 Act. And then those purposes are set out. Investor protection, how the market works to clear and settle securities transactions mechanically, investment bankers, the various participants in a market should the rules about how they interact with one another, and then finally Again, the investor protection. And the SEC itself is told that it cannot pass rules unless they have to do with investor protection or protecting how that security is traded. So the rules are very clear as to what the SEC may regulate in, and they are also very clear in forbidding it from going beyond those investor protection issues.
And, you know, this does remind me of one of the things that happens in administrative law all the time, which is that, you know, if the statute provides something for national security, some power for that, everything becomes national security. And here the SEC is doing the same thing whereby everything is investor protection that they want to do for other reasons. And that this kind of flavor seems to go through a lot of these cases where whatever it is they want to do at the moment becomes whatever their authorizing power was back in the 30s or the 20s, or for, I guess for the ICC it would be the 1880s. It's like, oh yeah, that's what we were allowed to do.
Like the eviction moratorium.
Oh yes, exactly.
Like the curbing the spread of disease somehow gives you
right. Exactly. It's always what you want to do today. So, you argued that. How'd it go? What'd you think?
I thought it went very well. Let me say this. The judges were very active and very interesting. Judge Elrod asked whether investors could be asked to provide information on whether they like Taylor Swift or what their opinions are between rappers Drake and Kendrick Lamar. But they also asked very serious questions, you know, in terms of whether religion or other aspects could be conditioned as the sorts of disclosures that these NASDAQ companies must make. And there's two penalties that hit a NASDAQ-listed company if they fail to disclose these issues. One is that they are forced into an explanation as to why. They can't just say nothing, which they are constitutionally guaranteed the right to do. But also, they could be delisted from the exchange, which these SEC and NASDAQ tried to make that's not really a big deal, but in fact, it is a very big deal.
Well, I thought, because the part I did listen to, I hadn't, I scanned the briefs in this, but I didn't know whether this was up front in this. But Judge Oldham asked the government, why just NASDAQ? Because the government's argument was that you could go to another exchange, right?
Right.
Well, under this Section 6B, he says, well, if it's necessary, then it should be necessary for all the exchanges. So if it is necessary, why – it must be necessary for all the exchanges, or it's not necessary, so you can't do it. I thought that was an amazing jujitsu question of taking their defense and then immediately asking why. You know, it's like it's like the old saw that in the military, everything that's optional soon becomes mandatory. And I guess in this 6B, that's where he was getting at, that it's required. Can you expound on that a little, what that means?
Well, there is two aspects to it. I think he's making a logical point that they did not respond to very effectively. So that's the first.
I thought it was completely flat-footed. I did not think that the response was as polished as the other responses. I don't know that it was expected.
It wasn't, I don't think. But the second point about that is that if these were to be approved for NASDAQ, as sure as God made little green apples, the other exchanges will follow on. That's just the way companies behave, and there'll be all kinds of clamoring for this sort of information. And that does lead to a very slippery slope here. And I think there was an air of unreality both in the first panel argument and this one, that if they're just proposing these rules and people are sort of free to comply with them, or if they provide a certain kind of explanation, they're going to be okay. And we all know what these rules are for. These rules are out there in order to shame companies and to allow people to boycott them or cancel them or otherwise harm their business, and that is completely contrary to investor protection, that sort of information that the government gathers that enables people to devalue stock. So it is anything but investor protective, and we were able to make those points in our briefs too. And the other thing that I think was I was able to get across to the court is this is internal corporate governance. The SEC has no business getting into that. In fact, dozens of states filed a brief in support of our position that said this is internal corporate governance is a traditional state law question, and the SEC has no power to intrude upon that. And one of my favorite parts of my argument was that Joseph Grundfest, who had been a former SEC commissioner, had, because he's on the board of NASDAQ, submitted what I would call as a very craftily worded amicus in support of it. But I was able to quote from a decision called Business Roundtable from 1990, when then SEC Commissioner Grundfest said... The same guy said explicitly that the 34 Act does not give carte blanche to adopt federal corporate governance rules through the back door of mandating listing standards.
And, you know, this is...
That's almost exactly what happened here.
Yes.
by gum. I think I landed a blow.
I think this is important because the states that put in briefs on that point did not include New York and Delaware. And I think I'm right about that, right? New York and Delaware did not. They're the main corporate governance places. They jealously guard it. But because of politics, they didn't get in on this. And it, again, shows the short-sightedness because if a Republican gets in there and puts in the same sort of thing for God knows what, they'll be screaming bloody murder, but they won't have protected the principle.
Well, the other moment that I thought I really got through to the court was they say, well, we don't force the directors to self-identify if they don't want to. Well, of course, if the whole purpose is to get reliable information on this, they would need to be honest about that. And they will feel compelled to disclose that. But then they said, well, we only disclose aggregate information.
All right. So when do we think we'll get a decision?
En banc decisions take time. There's 16 judges, and they will have to be doing a lot of discussion amongst themselves.
We'll have you back then. Thank you.